the entire multi-decade experiment of keeping the internet protected by the First Amendment and under the care and control of a relatively non-interventionist, largely non-interventionist U.S. government is done. And it is sailing away. The bird has been released. The power circulates now around the globe to let people get through to websites or not. And it's sort of one of these things that if you're a moral relativist, if you're into multiculturalism and, you know, there are just different cultures that do things in different ways, then the demands of other people to take over the internet, how can you possibly refuse it? You know, everyone is the same, so when other people want to be treated equally, how can you possibly say no? All cultures are the same. Nobody's better than anyone else. There's just different ways of doing things. So then why would you not want to hand over control of the internet to a conglomerate, a basket case of true deplorables like, I don't know, North Korea, China, Russia even? Why would you not want to hand all this over? Because remember, all cultures are the same, so what right would you ever have to say no? But if you go around the world, come back to, say, America and its unique protection of free speech in the world, in history, human beings around all over the globe, one country has a First Amendment, has a guaranteed protection, constitutional protection of free speech. One country in all of human history. So unless you're going to stand there and say, I'm sorry, China, as far as free speech goes, you suck. Sorry, Saudi Arabia, as far as free speech goes, you suck. You're terrible. So no, of course we're not going to hand it over. And this is the result of rather than reforming the NSA so, I don't know, it obeys the law and doesn't spy on everyone, particularly foreign leaders. Rather than reform the NSA, but that would be to shrink government power. What they want to do is hand over this grand treasure of the internet to all of the foreign regimes and all of the non-Western cultures and all of the non-Greek influenced Christian cultures, Renaissance, Enlightenment, classical liberal, free market, free speech, John Milton's Areopagitica, read it, it's fantastic, defense of free speech, hundreds of years ago. Yeah, I mean, this incredible space to speak, unique in human history, is only visible and available to people who have some values in their head that aren't just some goopy everyone, everything. You know, low-quality people can't figure out for the life of them what quality is. Multiculturalism, there's a thing called the Dunning-Kruger effect, which is that idiots can't tell skill, basically. People who aren't good at things don't know when people are good at things. And that makes sense. I don't know a good surgeon from a bad surgeon just by watching them. I don't know. A really good surgeon really does, because they know what they're talking about. Multiculturalism is the ultimate Dunning-Kruger effect. It's people who are fundamentally idiots not being able to differentiate a healthy and vibrant and moral culture from a degenerate totalitarian non-culture. Right? Culture is voluntary. When it's government, it's propaganda. So people in the world who say, well, you know, the cultures are just different ways of doing things, well, I guess they're never going to have a controversial thought, are they? They're never going to say anything that anyone's going to find upsetting. So what do they care about free speech? See, free speech is all about people saying stuff that is pretty horrible to a lot of people. You know, here's my recipe for cheesecake. That does not require free speech. You could do that in Soviet Russia. You could do that in communist China. You could probably even do that in North Korea if they had any ingredients for cheesecake. But it's when you say stuff that a lot of people find incredibly horrible. One guy finding horrible. Two guys, 50 guys, 50,000 guys. No. When a significant portion of the population finds what you're saying absolutely horrible, offensive, shocking, enraging, that's when you need free speech. You don't need a giant crusader shield when people are only throwing Nerf balls at you. But when there are real arrows coming down, that's when you need the shield. And so, very quickly, surprisingly fast, We are going to find out just how valued the concept of free speech is in other places in the world. And I can tell you this, it is not going to be fun. It is not going to be pretty. And we are going to finally understand, and maybe this is what is needed for us to finally understand the value and the glory and the beauty and the foundation of civilization is free speech. Because we all have disagreements. We all have to make decisions, sometimes collectively, sometimes individually. We all have disagreements, but we all have to make decisions. And the only way that we can do this peacefully is through free speech, through reason, through evidence, through a public discourse. May the best argument, may the best speaker, may the best evidence win. And when that is abandoned, when free speech is no longer sacred and at the heart of our civil discourse, well, we still have to make decisions, sometimes collectively. So what happens? What happens is government coercion, disappearances, lives destroyed. What happens is propaganda and threats of violence and the chilling effect that is not felt by the majority of people who have nothing of interest to say to the world. You can talk about the weather anywhere. You can talk about your cat having worms anywhere. But if you want to talk about things that are shocking and essential and moral and upsetting, because we all know that there are bad people in this world, there are bad people in society, there may even be bad people in your street. And when you speak virtue, when you speak the power and glory of goodness and consistency and universality and philosophy and morality, and the senses and reason and evidence, metaphysics, epistemology, politics, voluntarism, all those who use the cover-up of force called the state to prey upon the productive, whose con you expose through language. Language is like this water vapor in the line of a laser. You don't see the laser. There it is. There is the laser. Philosophy is like the water that shows the weapon. People don't see it, then they see it. Now, the whole point of people who want to use that weapon is to keep it invisible to the general population, which means it can't ever be talked about, it can't ever be shown, it can't ever be referenced even in absence. We can't talk even that much about the free market because that, by implication, talks about the coercion of the state. And so, when people profit off the hiding of the weaponized ideology called the state, they do not want free speech. When people profit from lies, from propaganda, from indoctrination, from the cover-up of the crime that they wish to commit in the name of society, the common good, whatever, free speech is their enemy. Because when their supposed benevolence is revealed as tangible malevolence, which can only be done with words, that is when the con breaks. And words have been used to expose the coercive nature of elements in society for thousands of years. And this battle between words and weapons has been going on for thousands of years. And I think we really, really, really just lost big time.